Today's daf in the Sechet Chulin brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh is daf Nun Gimel, and we're holding at Boi Rav Ashi, because we went down pretty far yesterday, and we came out that there were basically three different levels. We have the Gedim and Tloim. Gedim and Tloim are very small animals. So Behemadaka, young Behemadaka, like Mary had a little lamb. And you want to make sure that you don't let even a cat get over to that little lamb, because Yesh Lechatul Drusa, in that case, as far as the middle size, which is a Behemadaka, but they are fully grown sheep, then we said Ein Drusa Lechatul. And if we were talking about Ofot, then we said even less than a Chatul, even a Chulda, or a rat, probably, has drusa. Now, the question is, we did say in the Mishnah that there's the concept of drusa by a bird to a bird. So a netz is capable of being dores, small birds, and a gas is capable of drusa even on an ofagas, on a large bird. So by Rav Ashi, is this something that is unique to these particular two birds, or are we talking once again about a particular size birds, and then we can understand that from that point up, it would be in each different set, the small or the large, would be able to be dares. So, shar ofot me'im, yesh lehem drusa, o ein lehem drusa. So, what's the halacha there? Omar le Rav Hillel Rav Ashi, ki avinam de Rav Kahana Omar, Shar ofot me'im yesh lehem drusa. The din is that other birds, all tamei birds, would also be capable of drusa. What? So then why did the Mishnah specify dafka, the drusas hanetz, of hadak, and so on? I mean, why dafka the netz in the gas? Isn't it apparent that it's indicating a particular species that is capable of drisa, but that normally we wouldn't say drisa in the oaf, no? How do you explain the Mishnah? Ah, these two birds actually do have a very special halacha that is different than other birds, because these two are unique, because the drusas hanetz can actually be dores, a bird of the same size as itself, whereas all of the other ofot me'im, they are b'dezutra minayim. They're only shayach to drisa if the victim is smaller than the predator. Whereas others say it's one step down. The drusa hanetz is even b'deravri minayim. It nates and the gas, both of them are capable of creating a drisa even in a bird that is larger than they are. Now, she'inkin, the other ofot me'im, which general, remember, as we're going to, well, I shouldn't say remember, unless you remember from last time we did it, but we're going to see that this one of the simonim of the ofot me'im is that they are capable of drisa. As a matter of fact, that was the whole big problem of the turkey. As I'm sure you know, those who are noyig not to eat turkey is because supposedly a turkey was seen as being dores, and therefore it was considered to be by those who saw it, that's the Shalah and the descendants of the Shalah Machmir, that it's considered to be a non-kosher bird because it's dores. Anyway, so therefore we're saying Inach, the other, Ofot Temein, that's what we said specifically, Ofot Temein, they are able to be dores. And according to this version, they could be dores even the same size as themselves, whereas the nates and the gas can be dores even those which are larger than themselves. Omar Rav Kahana b'Shmei Rav Shimi bar Ashi, the question is whether does Mr. Fox have a drisa? Now, I don't know whether we have a Richie Handy over yet. He seems to have run away today because of the implications. Well, we'll have to wait. So, what about a fox? Says Rav Kahana that Rav Shimi bar Ashi says there's no drusa to the fox. Really? Bak Yasser of Dimi Amar? We know a story in which a fox was actually dores a Rachel. This is all Richie because these are his kids' names. All right, so a fox was dores a Rachel, which sounds like it's a full-grown sheep. I mean, normally we refer to a Rachel as a full-grown sheep. It's a ewe. Anyway, this was in the Merchatz of Beit Hini. And they brought it to the Beis Din. And they said, there is a din of drisa in fex. Omer of Safra, no, that was not a case of a fox. That was a case of a cat. Don't remind me. And that question about the cat, of course, raises a problem, because we just said a moment ago that a cat can only have drisa on a small, young, Mary had a little lamb, and not on a full Rachel. Now, according to this, we'd have to say that the Rachel is just sort of a general reference to a female sheep, but it's a reference here to a small sheep, which is strange. What else can you say? Ikeri Amri. And others say that the whole thing went the opposite direction here, that Omer of Kana B'Shmid Rav Shimi Bar Ashi, Yesh Drusa L'Shual. It all started off at the Psak that a fox can be Doris. And we asked on that from the mice in which the Paskin that a fox cannot be Doris. Amy? Look, he also of Dimi Omer Maaseh V'Doras Shual Rochel B'Mrechacha Beitini Uba Maaseh Lifnei Chachamim V'Yamru Ein Drusa. The exact opposite. So they said there is no drisa to a fox. And Rav Safra said that was a reference not to a fox, it was actually a dog. And the general rule is, Omer of Yosef, Naktinan, we have a Kabbalah, that ein drisa lakelev. There's no such thing as drisa by a kelev. A kelev does not have that impact when it's doris. Omer Abaye, Naktinan, ein drisa elabiyad. We also have a Kabbalah that drisa is achieved only by a foreleg and not by a regel. Afuke regel de lo. Furthermore, ein drusa ela bitziporen. It's only if the victim was clawed, but not if it was bitten. Afuke shein de lo. Furthermore, ein drusa ela midaat. It has to have the animal that's attacking, the predator, has to have an intention to be doreis. Afuke shalomidat de lo. And furthermore, ein drusa ela mechayim, the predator has to be alive, not if it fell and its claws penetrated while it was dead. Lafuki le'achar mita dolo. That's what we think it means. Which, of course, there's a little bit of a problem, because if there's not even an intent to be dores, it's not considered to be a drisa, I would think that it's sort of obvious that if the animal's dead, and it doesn't have any intent. So Koshikane, if it's dead, there's not going to be a drisa. So how do you explain that? Amre. Hashta shalomidat amartalo. If you said that even without intent, there's no drisa, li'achar mitami boy. So, of course, we don't need to mention the fact that if it's dead, it certainly doesn't have any intention, does it? No, what we're talking about here is not that the animal is dead. What we're talking about is that the claw is dead. The organ is dead. Meaning, that if, let's say the case would be that if they cut off the hand, the claw that was doing the drisa, and they cut off that claw before it actually was withdrawn, so then that's what it's coming to tell me, a tremendous chiddush, that it's only upon withdrawal that we have the din of drisa. Because ma'o detema b'hadi de doris shadi ziyara. I might have thought that at the point that it claws, that's when its poison is inserted. Once again, the Gemara seems to be talking about this non-extant poison. And therefore, it's coming to teach us that no, it's only as it's withdrawing its claw that it would inject this poison. So I think we're pretty clear about the fact, Rabosai, that you cannot explain away these Gemaras by saying that we're talking about pathogens. We're clearly, the Gemara keeps talking about intent, injection, in the way out, and there is no physical evidence of any such phenomena existing. And therefore, people point to it again as another problem of contradictions of the physical reality with the way the Gemara defines that reality. And this is very, very bolate in Hilchas Treifa, where we have all kinds of inyanim and treifas that don't necessarily make medical sense, and things that nowadays would be a treifa, and the Gemara says it's not a treifa, and so on and so forth. So I want to remind you once again that all of these questions are really moot questions, because remember that halacha has no interest in the underlying reality. It only has interest in observable reality. And remember, this was the yesod that the Chazon Ish pointed out in various places. And it's obviously the fact, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to drink a drink of water. And what would we be able to do with our booze, Gavi? And then, because, look at all of those microorganisms. I can see them right from here. Anyway, my gosh, I would never believe that you would drink such stuff. Anyway, as you know, in a nice drink of water, you're drinking an awful lot of animals and sea creatures that don't have any kind of fins and so on and so forth, right? So in general, we need to realize that the Torah was given, as we've seen in so many different sugyas, so many different gemaras, the Torah was given to a primitive human that is not equipped with additional instruments. The idea is that this is what it takes to make yourself a human on this planet. It has no interest in whether an animal reproduces sexually or asexually. It only has an interest in what you see of its reproduction. And therefore, if these animals supposedly come out of the dirt, which is what it sure looked like for thousands of years to the most highly trained human beings, then that's the way that the halacha continues to look at this. And again, as the Chazon Ish explains, the Alpayim Torah is the time at which we decide that. It's not defined by an ongoing development. Well, now that we know that this animal actually does reproduce sexually, so now you're not allowed to kill it on Shabbos, and so on and so forth. None of that is meaningful, halakhically speaking. And that means that all of these questions are no different than any of the other issues of Hilchos Treifos. The realities of Drisa are not the point. The experiences of Drisa are the only point, so that the interrelationship of Adam with the world around him is a function of exactly that, interrelationship. The Torah deals with that interrelationship, does not come to address facts in any way. The Torah will never say, and as the earth turned and the local star became visible, it says, as the sun rises. Now, that's ridiculous. Their stars don't rise. So what in the world would that mean? It's obvious that the Torah is nonsense. Okay. I mean, even till today, people still say the sun rises and the sun sets. Now, why do they say something so stupid? There's no such thing as a sunrise and a sunset. So obviously, we continue to relate to the world around us in very primitive ways. And it takes a great deal of effort for us to adjust our thinking so that when we're looking at the sunset or the sunrise, we realize we're looking straight across to our local star through the atmosphere of our planet as it's turning. And so, okay, it takes a while till that becomes the way that you see the world, but it's not the way that you experience the world. And therefore, as we say, the Torah is a description of how to relate to the experiences that we make of reality. If we're going to start talking about reality, you could just chuck out everything, because there is no such thing. Everything that we have, every experience that we have, every mathematics that we have, every experimental result that we have, are all filtered through the very ridiculous mechanism that comes up with these conclusions that we call our brain, none of which has any specific relationship to a particular well-grounded reality, including mathematics itself. Go away, minor bird. Out! Okay. So, anyway, I think that all of these questions are not really meaningful questions in the least. And so as we go through the parak, we can see the attempts at explaining this and explaining that, but there's really no need for any of this, and it never works anyway. I see Moshe Andel has a raised hand, or he gave up on that raised hand. It says there's a raised hand. Huh?
It seems sort of contradictory, the idea of a primitive experience of phenomena, and all of these details that they're going into in terms of the subtlety of the nature of this imaginary reason.
Not at all. Are you kidding? There's thousands of years of medical research and medical information and medical training of 10 years of medical school to become a doctor with things that don't exist. Medicines that don't exist. Illnesses that don't exist. Organs that don't exist. Come off it, man. In great detail. Enormous tomes of literature, all of which don't exist. And yet we're perfectly useful for all of humanity's ills for millennia. So what are you going to do? Listen, listen, sweetheart. If elephants have experiences that allow them to develop a complex medical history, as you know, right? Kosher, you know this, don't you? You don't know this, okay? So elephants have a misera of medicine. They know particularly which areas to go to fix what things, even to the extent of being aware of what trees have the type of chemicals that act as hormones for elephants. So if they have a problem with giving birth, they find trees that actually do have equivalent hormones that will allow them to start ovulating, and so on and so on. That's how sophisticated elephants are. And this is talking about trees that they have to walk 100 miles in order to get to. So this is Miseres Midor Lador, which I'm sure Alon, if he were up, would tell you about it. But he's sort of forgetting his elephants now, living where you still remember your elephants. Okay. All right. So if elephants know how to get along in the world through experience, and humans who follow these elephants can actually discover all types of new medications in trees and in plants that they never knew about, experience is central to the whole idea of medicine. Detailed experience. Which particular exact tree and which part of the tree, and so on. As Miseres Midor Lador. Quite astounding, isn't it? So,
yeah, but does that mean that if we were to do an experiment with cutting off the claws of an animal, which was Doris before it,
as the Rambam says in discussing exactly this issue in the din of when something has a halacha of Darkei Amori, which is a halacha of Iser to engage in that type of medication, versus something that has a din of a segula, versus what is this? Mitalech? We'll talk about that in a moment. So as the Rambam says, you're very lucky if your experimental results mean anything, because you've undoubtedly overlooked some element that you haven't controlled for. And kosher, if you're talking about a type of belief in a cure, which is just anecdotal, I don't care how many thousands of people report it. Nonetheless, the halacha considers the anecdotal approach to be acceptable as long as it isn't part of a worldview that attributes it to some type of supernatural cause. Then it becomes a superstition, and then it becomes Darkei Ha'amori. Then there's the second layer, which is called segula, where we have no medical reason to believe it works, but people report that it works. So you're allowed to engage in it, but you can't be Mechal Shabbos for it. And then we have our experimental results, which you have a right to rely on if they're properly controlled for Chilul Shabbos, but only if they're part of a system of medicine and so on. This is the Rambam's definition. Now, if he's talking about you got a very small chance of your experimental results being meaningful, that means you go with the best that you've got. So, and that's in terms of the direct Chilul Shabbos, where we don't have any kind of specific guidelines for. So halachas kama v'kama, where we have halachas of generalizations of categories of treifas, that these are ways in which we relate to the world. That's what I believe, that Hilchas Treifas is no different than Hilchas Kashrus. And if Hilchas Kasher or Hilchas Chilul Shabbos, and if Hilchas Chilul Shabbos allows you to kill bugs that don't sexually reproduce, even though they do, and if Hilchas Tarfas allows you to sit there and to drink 100 million organisms that all you need to do is look through a microscope or even a good magnifying glass and you wouldn't be drinking them, then obviously Ilchus Dreyfus is, there's no reason in the world to suggest that Ilchus Dreyfus is the one body of knowledge that the Torah is giving you that is meant to reflect scientific truth. It's ridiculous. We've been talking about foxes that go and claw a Rachel. Now, what do you think about that, Mr. Fox? A Rachel, okay? So if I were you, I would behave. And come on time to Daf Yomi, you could be careful about which one of your descendants you're going to be damaging. My gosh. Anyway, I mean, I don't know, like, why you would think that Ilchus Dreyfus is different than the rest of the Torah, that's all. Why would it be? Would you have an explanation, Mr. Handy Boy? What do you say?
I don't know. It sounds like they did experiments or something. How would they know the difference between a claw that was withdrawn and a claw that was cut off?
So maybe they did. But like the Rambam says, experiments don't usually mean anything.
Really?
There's not enough controls. You haven't accounted for something. You're thinking that something is a cause when it was just an additional factor. Or maybe it was even a result. I mean, this is like the most common thing in the world, even today, right? Where you have to have a peer review, and very often it turns out you failed to account for this, and you made this wrong conclusion here, and so on and so forth. This is like 90% of what are supposed laboratory experiments, results. They all contradict each other. I'm sure as Dr. Barry will be happy to let you know about how much you can rely on all of the wonderful results that the drug companies send you. And we, okay, great.
Well, please, all these exceptions to Greece are tremendous clueless, right?
What's that? Yeah,
all these exceptions.
But they're only clueless because there were chumras. In the beginning. So whoever created the chumras created the kulas. What's the problem? There are ways to relate to the world, that's all. I don't really see how it could be otherwise, because there is no real world that we know about. We have absolutely no way of defining a real world. As that becomes more and more clear, all of these issues become more and more disturbing. Why are we giving these absolute definitions of things that may not even exist except in our brain? Okay, so this is exactly how it is that the Torah allows us to proceed and expects us to proceed within a world that we can never, ever really make sense of. So therefore, if the only instruction book that we have is this, and this is and it's an amazing Bria that allows us experiences of things that we should not logically have any experiences of, and allows our minds to conceive of entire structures and mathematical structures that have no basis in any reality, that exactly are the precise expression of the way that the world acts. What an amazing coincidence. So all of these things are no greater coincidence than in Ilchus Dreyfus. I think that the whole thing is based on a primitive assumption about the nature of reality. And then when you start growing out of that, you're left with contradictions, of course. Anyway, that is my theory. I don't believe that there is any other approach that could possibly work to try to get you to see that somehow or other it means the same thing. It doesn't. That's all. It's clear from the Gemara. All of these attempts at defining it away is not the way to go. I think that's pretty clear. Big mistake. I think Barnea sent me yesterday. Did Barnea, was it you, Reb Barnea? Did you send me yesterday something from that Rational Judaism site?
Not yesterday, maybe a few days ago. Yes, I did. I sent it.
And he was forced to conclude that you're going to be left with a contradiction between science and Torah. Right. Okay. All right. So obviously there can't be such a contradiction. Okay. I don't want to use up all of our time on the philosophy here, but all right, Mo, if you have a brief question that does not involve Otniel ben Knaz.
It's brief. Just something. Rebbe had referred me to Moshe Taylor once for Shiloh. He said, when he was close by, he said over a story they asked Rav Moshe, some Shaila the American government needed. So they asked him, how in the Talmud, how do Jews experiment and what, how do they understand this? He said they were very observant Jews. That was his.
Okay. Thank you for taking Reb Barnea's place today, and we can move on.
All right. The elephants can travel so far, but they have a trunk with them.
I didn't hear it, sorry. Omer Rabba Baravuna Omer Rab. Ari shenichnas lebein hashvarim, v'nimtza tziporin begabo shalech habayan. So let's say we have a lion that gets into a herd of oxen, and we find in the back of one of these oxen, we find a fingernail, a claw, detached, obviously, like a nail from this claw. In choshishin shema ari darso. Just because we found an embedded claw does not mean that this animal was clawed. Why? Because, I mean, analyze like the situation over here. It's true that most lions are dores, if they're given an opportunity. However, it's also true that there's a miut that is not dores. And if you take a look at the cases where there is a drisa, it's almost unheard of that a tziporin should be nishmetet from a drisa. So therefore, if we find a tziporin yoshevet lo begabo, it makes much more sense. Anybody who's watched cats, as Dr. Barry will tell us, and who's watched lions, as Naftali will tell us, will say how it is that the cats and members of that family rub their claws against trees or rough surfaces. And that's probably what happened over here, that a tziporin became detached when it was rubbing against a wall. And then the ox over here was bekoto nitrachech, and it just got that claw. It's more reasonable that an active clawing would drop a nail of the claw. So according to this, we don't have to worry about it. I don't understand. I mean, you could make the opposite argument. You could say, Adarabah. You could say, Rov Shvarim are mitchachekim, umiyutane mitchachekim. It's true that most shvarim do rub against walls, but not all of them. And most of the time that a shvar rubs against the wall, you ain't going to find nothing in their back from that wall. And therefore, zeho v'tziporin yoshevet lo begabo, why don't I say that it's an unusual situation? And let's assume that an ari was dorso. That's the point, says the Gemara. That's the point I'm making. That part was obvious. Obviously, you could think that. I'm simply saying, ikala meimar hochi, v'ikala meimar hochi. Look, whatever, you don't know what happened. There's all these factors to take into consideration. It could be it's this happened, it could be that happened. There's no reason for us to assume that something that was not a treifa became a treifa. The shore was not a treifa. So we have a chazaka. Now you're telling me, well, look, we've got evidence. That's not evidence. That's evidence that could go either way. But isn't that the whole point of a chazaka? That if evidence can go either way, then make no assumptions about changes. That's all. And this is basically Rav's entire approach to the question of Suffolk Drusa. This is Rav Lataime. Rav holds as a general rule, Ein Koshishin the Suffolk Drusa, which became embedded in the magic of Gavi's wand. Omra Baye. Lo amran ela tziporen, avo mokan tziporen choshishin. This is only if you find a claw, the keratin of the claw embedded in the back. If you see the mark of the claw, and you see those etzbaot aligned, now that's a different issue. You don't get that by rubbing up against the wall. You get that by rubbing up against the cat. And therefore, if it's the mokam tziporin, then we are choshishin. And even this whole idea where you find a tziporin and we say that it doesn't make sense to assume that it was a result of a drisa, that's where the tziporin is alive, meaning it still is bloody and it was obviously connected to a claw. But, I mean, if it had a dry tziporin that could have become easily detached without needing to rub it up against a wall, if it was Yevesha, then that actually could very well happen. And even when we're talking about halacha, the only way that Rav said you don't have to worry about it if you find one. But if you find two, it becomes too much of a coincidence. So avotreu tlat, to find two or three of these siporens, that is much more reasonable to say came from an actual event of a lion's clawing instead of rubbing against a wall. But of course, when I say two or three, I don't mean scattered at random. I mean along the row that they would have been if the animal had been clawed. So it looks like the fingerprints, so to speak, the claw prints of the lion. Itmar. So getting to that din that we just mentioned about Rav, Rav Amar ain choshishin the suffix rusa, but Shmuel argues on this whole yesod. And he says, Choshishin the suffix drusa. Now, when we talk about this, I mean, obviously, what type of suffix we're talking about? Everybody agrees that in the event, Kuliyama, suffix al, suffix lo al, you're not even certain that a lion got into the herd. So then, okay, that's crazy. What am I going to start worrying about? Because the door was left open, so therefore I have to be chayshesh that a lion got in. If I have no way of knowing and no reason to assume that the lion got into the herd, I'm not going to be chayshesh. That even Shmuel is mode. Imalo al. Why start? How about if there definitely was an attack? I'm not sure. Maybe it was a dog. Maybe it was a cat. Why should I assume it was a cat? Maybe it was a dog. If there's a lion that definitely did get in, and we saw it there, but it was sitting there smoking a cigar, and it was shasit ve'etuv b'nayu, and it's sitting there lying. Obviously, this was a Trump lion, and he must have made peace with them, because after all, you can make peace with anybody as long as you give them everything they want. So imer shlama shavik, this is a lazy lion, so he made peace. How about if the lion goes in, and in that case, instead of making peace, what we have is a lot of roaring. And these oxen are making a lot of noise, and they're all running around making these awful sounds. And the lion is going roar, and so on. Well, that's just mutual showing off. They're basically both scared, and they're making a big show of being ferocious. Yeah, that's clearly the kind of lion that needs the Wizard of Oz. So be tutikabaate. That's not going to be a real lion that will attack. They're just scaring each other. So the machlokas would only be in a case when the lion is ominously silent. Real lions don't eat kish and don't make a lot of noise when they're ready to eat. And therefore, the lion is completely quiet and these oxen are making a lot of noise. Ve'inu komekarkaran. So Marsa Vashmul says, look, I mean, if they're making all of that noise, they're obviously being hurt. Ma'aseka avibuhu. This lion is clearly doing something. He must be attacking them. Whereas Rav says, what do you mean? They're scared. Umarsa Vashmul must be tuti udika avdan. That's what animals do when they're scared. They make a lot of noise and they're trying to run around in circles and hope to escape the lion. But doesn't mean anything happened. Omra Mimar, the halacha is, like Shmuel, Chayshishin the Suffolk Drusa. Amalei Rav Ashila Meimar, you can't just say that. I mean, what about Rav? Rav says that in Chayshishin. Amalei Lo Shmieli. I never heard about it, which doesn't really mean I didn't hear about it. It means Lo Shmieli, it isn't hearable by me, so to speak. In other words, Lo Sfirali. I don't hear that. It's like we say, even in English, I don't hear that. I don't hear that doesn't mean I don't hear that. It means I don't hear that. So, Lo Shmieli, Klomar, Lo Sfirali. Or, you know what? It could be that Amemar wouldn't have made that determination. But what Amemar knew was that actually Rav had Harata. Because you could say, Ibaitema, Honabe Rav Lagabe de Shmuel. We know that he must have had Harata because there was the Sharkafat, the Suffolk Drusas, the Osa, the Kame, the Rav. So what happened over here, somebody had a bunch of chicken, and there was a Nates that came in, and it could have, like, been Doris, all of those chickens that were inside of that cage, And they brought the whole thing to Rav. And instead of giving a psak, he sent them to Shmuel that Shmuel should give the psak. And Shmuel strangled them all and threw them into a river. So, I mean, if Rav would have held that they were really only Suffolk Drusas that are mutter, and he still held that, why did he send them to Shmuel? He knew what Shmuel was going to do. Now, Isaac, you should have just said, if you think he didn't have charata, he should have just said, these are mutter. So clearly, he no longer held that they were mutter. I didn't understand. So what do you think? You think he had charata, and now he held they were usser? So why does he have to send them to Shmuel to make them usser? He can make them usser himself. So he should have, my, hodarbe, lisrinu. So let him say, I changed my mind, and I hold it's usser. So the reason he sent them to Shmuel was not because he wanted Shmuel to pass him that they were usser. It's because the question came to him while he was in a town that generally accepted Shmuel as their pesach. And therefore, he felt that he didn't have a right to paskin over there. And he said, you send it to the Rav that is here. And he is the, actually, Moreh D'Atre. I'm not going to paskin. That doesn't mean that he held of it in any way. But I understand. So why did Shmuel have to go out and strangle them? I mean, like, this seems to be rather, I mean, all he needed to do, if he didn't want them to be available, he could have just thrown them into the river. No, they could have gotten out of the river and flown away, and then somebody wouldn't have known that they were Drusus and would have eaten them. Okay, but still, I mean, to go and to choke them to death, I mean, just put them in a cage, keep them for 12 months. Here's the first time that we've seen this, that if a treifa survives for Yud Beis Chodesh, so then we know, retroactively, it was not a treifa. So instead of killing them, we could have simply kept them in a cage for 12 months, see if they survived, Lashino Shneimasar Chodesh, and then we would know that they could be eaten. It seems like Baltashkas to just throw them out. Well, if we're going to keep them around for 12 months, somebody is going to be Atibuli de Takala. Someone will end up, probably, in the course of time, somebody would end up using them in some way. Okay, so then just sell them to a guy. I mean, he's not usher to eat treifas. No, if I sell them to a guy, what's he going to do with all of these birds? He's going to end up putting them on the market. So they're going to end up with a Jew. Otu lesbino de Yisrael. Okay, so then, so you want to get rid of them, strangle them, and throw them into the garbage pail. I mean, what is this business, strangling them, and throwing them into the river? I mean, what's the point? Come on, you're not thinking straight. I mean, you're looking for alternatives. Why throw them? You could feed them to the dogs. I mean, they're very good dog food, no? So why not allow the dogs to get at them? Nishdino leklavim, save yourself on all of those dog food costs, you know? Ella, it's clear that this whole thing was done, but Davka, to get people to stay, what the heck? What's going on? What? So that people wanted people to know this was a publicity stunt. It was the Farsume Milta de Isura. He wanted people to know, do not rely on Rav, who says Suffolk Drusa is kosher. Suffolk Drusa is very not kosher. And therefore, he wanted to make a point of it, but Davka, because of Rav's psak. Now, there was another Maisa, where it was this cute little ducky on Rav Ashi's yard, and it was a Baravza the Havi Bey Rav Ashi. Anyway, little ducky goes walking to the pond, and around the pond there is these very nice reeds. This is a very bucolic scene of Rav Ashi's home. Little ducks walking around, reeds surrounding the pond. Ah, everything looks wonderful. And then tragedy interferes. Ducky comes out of the reeds bleeding, and his whole neck is all bloody. And you can imagine Rav Ashi's kids, they were not happy to see little ducky all covered with blood. What was the din? Ataki mamas miskui dama. Well, Rav Ashi, well, didn't we say before that if you're not sure if it was a doggy or a cat, you can assume it was a dog, and you don't have to be machzik isura. So here, too, you don't know whether it was a sharp reed that cut the little ducky, or maybe it was a cat that clawed the ducky. So I should go and assume that the Kanya machia, the same way I could have assumed that a doggy was machia. And therefore, there should be no problem. As long as we don't have a problem of an actual cutting through the simoni. Okay, that we can check for. But we don't have to be chayish for drisa. Now, what happens? Remember, when we're talking about drisa, we are not talking about damage to an organ. We're not talking about the equivalent of being stuck with a knife, being stuck with a thorn. Those are problems which either do exist in the organ or don't exist in the organ. The whole concept of drisa is that there is no hole that is currently there that was made by the dores, but that the impact of whatever it is that the drisa does to the victim ultimately is going to cause an actual trephus. So that is the question of bedika. What kind of bedika? We know that it's possible to make a bedika, and it says that it needs a bedika, as we're going to see. What type of bedika are we talking about? Well, what we need to do is to check the entire area kineged b'nei me'ayim. We need to look and see if there was any evidence of reddening that was opposite, on the outside of the body, opposite any of the organs that are kineged, that area where, if there would be a hole, it would actually have been a drepha. So therefore, we're assuming if there was a reddened area where there was a clawing, so then that drisa would have ultimately caused a deterioration of the organ and would have made it a hole. And as we're going to see in a bit, not only made it a tiny hole, but actually make it a chaser because it would have degenerated. The tissue degenerates because of the whatever the impact is of the drisa, the poison, the pathogens, whatever it is. But in our experience, this is what happens. And therefore, you need to make certain that there was nothing that was connected, anything that would be a trefa that shows signs of having been darus. So what is that area? Sricha bedika kineged b'nei me'ayin. So basically, you have to take a look all around any of the, after you do the shchita, you take a look at the basar. You don't have to look at the organ itself. If the basar kineged that organ has turned red, then there is a sign that there was going to be, ultimately, there was going to be a hole. And that is our general din and trephus. Wherever something is ultimately going to be there, then that's the way that we treat it as if it already happened. So therefore, you need to check all of the b'nei me'ayim. So b'nei me'ayim would include the dakim and the re'el and the kaved and so on. Amar Rav Yosef, ha'de b'nei Rabbi Chiya. What b'nei Rabbi Chiya said over here, kvar pirsha shmua. This was something that was already explained before. Shmuel explained it. Now, these words, Kfar Pirsha Shmuel, turn out to be a pattern that the Daf is going to continue to discuss different cases, which might not even be Nogea, us, and our Sugya directly, different cases where someone or another had already explained it. And we're wondering, why do we need to redo this? It was already explained. So this is now the page of already explained. So, okay, this B'nai Rabbi Chiya, that was already explained by Shmuel. Because Shmuel said, Yomar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Chanina Ben Antignos, Drusa She'amru Tzricha Betika Kineged B'nai Me'ayim. So this is a well-known din. Is it sufficient? Boy, how about the Simanim? Yesh Drusa the Simanim? Oh, Andrews al Simani. So before we discuss whether we have a chashash of nefila when it comes to simonim, if you recall, and we said the simonim are koshimim, they are considered to be well protected, and of course, as they are very strongly protected against a nefila. What about the din of drisa? So suppose there was a drisa connected to simonim. Would we have to check the simonim as well? You said only connected b'nei me'ayim. Omer Rebbe Zira. Here's another case. Ah, what Ilfa asked, Kvar Pirsha. Here's our next Kvar Pirsha. Kvar Pirsha Rav Chanan Bar Rava, and he quoted Rav. The Omer Rav Chanan Bar Rava Omer Rav, Drusa Sha Omer Tzricha B'dika Keneged Beit HaChalal Kulo, Vafilu B'simani. So then that means that we have a broader type of B'dika than we said before by Shmuel, because over here, you're going to also need, says Rashi, according to this, the Chalal Kulo would even include the legs, the neck, and the simanim itself, and therefore we're talking about a much broader type of bedika than Shmuel seemed to have been talking about. Boy simanim. Now, the only reason, boy simanim, boy Yelfa, the only reason that we're mentioning this here is because of the pattern of Kvar Pirsha. So even though this is strange for us to be bringing up again, but boy Yofa, simanim shenidaldalu bekama. So, okay, so we had this before a couple of weeks ago. What is the din of the simanim that were pulled? They're not completely detached, and they were pulled, but they're still connected in places. What's the amount of dildo that is considered to be akira simani? Omer Rabbi Zera, you see, it's another one of these Kvar Pirshas that we're adding over here. And this one was Mefurash by Rabba Bar Bar Chana, this time not in the name of Rav, but in the name of Shmuel. The Omar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Omar Shmuel, as we saw before, Simanim Shenidaldalu is a din in Rov. Another question that is only being brought up because of Kvar Pirsha. Boy Rabani, what would be the din of Hamas Masa? Now, of course, we've already seen this term mismus in many different ways, including the so-called hemses, because that's what happens to the hemses. The masas is where the decayed material that has been sitting in the keres, where over there is the main bacterial action that allows the celluloids, which is not digestible, to break down, and then it goes from, remember, the keres into the Beit HaKosel, and then into the hemses, so that we have over there the way in which the material has been already completely mushy, which is the English equivalent of musmus, right? So it's mushy material now, and it's decaying. So let's say it's gangrenous. What would be the din? So Omer Rebbe Zera, well, this question of Rabbani, Kvar Pirsha Rav Yehuda, and this time we're back to a Kvar Pirsha, the name of Rav. The Omer Rebbe Yehuda, Omer Rav, Bidrusa, if you have a case of a drisa, so then you need to have a reddening of the basar keneged the bnei me'ayin. And in the case where you have a decay that has set in, well, whatever it is that caused that decay, any basar that is decaying, we're going to define what we mean by decaying soon, is as if it's not there. So if a hole or a chisorin that would be in that spot would have caused a trefa, then decaying basar is exactly as if that is a hole there. But how do you define decay? Heichi dami nitmas meis. Omer Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Yoshua. Basically, decay is defined medically. Whatever would be curetted by a doctor, so he would actually shave off all of that material to make sure that it doesn't continue infecting the rest of the flesh. So whatever his curet would be taking off, kol sharofei godro umamido al basar chai, which the doctor needs to do in order to get clean and fresh actual skin there or flesh there that is going to be able to regenerate, and anything that would have been removed is seen as if it's already removed in the case of decay. If that is enough to cause a trefes, then that's trefes. And Rav Ashi says, we had a situation like that. We were learning the din of a trefes by Rav Kahana, and they bring in this lung, and it looks completely okay. Did he have any atri or yatra shapir? When the lung was on the slab that they brought the lung in to show us, I don't know, it just looked like a regular lung. But then as you lift the lung, ki avimatilu, ave talcha, benofa tilche tilche, it would actually start falling apart and pieces would fall off. So it was obviously decayed based on what we just learned. Tarifna la mi Ravuna bereda Rav Yehoshua. We said that, just like Ravuna said, anything that would have been curated away is not there. So then this is a lung that is chaser. And a lung that is chaser is obviously a trefa. Now, speaking about the differences between an actual drisa or a penetration by just a kotz. So Rav Nachman Omer, look, the difference is, when you're talking about a kotz, an animal gets punctured by a thorn. There, the only question is, did it actually get all the way into the cavity of the body that would have allowed it to touch and puncture an organ? So it has to be achitina kevlo halal. But that's not the case of a drusa. A drusa, all we need is that the busser that was connected to b'nei me'ayim, that it should become red, as we saw. And the way that Rav Zvid explained it, or said it over, was like this. B'drusa, mishiyadim busser connected b'nei me'ayim. It's true that when you're talking about a drusa, then the meat, that is the muscle that is connected, the area of an organ that would be affected, is enough of an indication of drisa. You don't need for the organ itself to be reddened or to show any impact. But when it comes to simanim, the simanim are only going to be affected by drisa if they themselves were touched. So if they don't redden, hachi adimu simanim atzman, in that case, it would not be considered to be a drisa. Well, when you say reddened, how much of a reddened? Omer of Papi, boy of Bibi Parabai. The veshet, we know the veshet, even the tiniest hole, is going to create a trephis. So I understand that any small reddening is going to cause that tiny hole. So veshet nikuvato b'mashu makes sense that the drusa is b'mashu. But how about a kana? A kana doesn't get, if it gets a hole, does it become a trefa? Only if it is missing the size of an iser. That's a very significant size of the coin of an iser. And the kuvatobiki iser. So how much reddening does there have to be in the case of the drusa? Bosser the boy, after he asked that question, he realized it's a stupid question. Echad zev v'echad zev b'mashu. The whole point over here, it's not that the red is the whole. It's that the red is the effect. Once it's been affected, it's going to continue to rot whatever it's affecting. So echad zev v'echad zev b'mashu. I don't care if it needs the size of an iser. My taima, ziare mikla kolei v'azel, because it continues to spread. And whatever it is that's destroying that flesh is just going to get bigger and bigger. So in the end, in the same way, in the end, we say it's as if there was already a hole there. It's as if there was already a chisorin, the size of a ke'iser. Whew. Now that was an exciting daf. And we managed to discuss some serious issues. And now we can get back to Mikey's question. If Mikey wants to talk now, instead of just write, hey, Mikey, go for it, sir.
Rebbe said that, like the Chazon Ish was saying, that the time of Torah was when things, if I understood correctly, that but that's when things got sealed, and then we don't like, sorry, we don't like that's it's sealed. Then I thought that the whole point is that it's mitalech, and if we had a Sanhedrin, things would change, and like the rules of how we relate to the world would be based on the reality at the time, meaning our current knowledge and stuff. So is that you misunderstand something?
No, you're no misunderstand at all. But that the yesedas of what is and what is not. In other words, for instance, let's say we would find out that certain kind of fish that don't have fins and that don't have scales are actually a variation of a species that does have finite scales, right? The point is that that wouldn't make any difference because the definition is given at the time of the Alpine Torah, or even in certain cases at the time of Torah itself. Let's say we spoke before about what is considered to be hyssop. Now, there's hundreds of types of hyssop, right? But Ezov Yavan is not considered to be Ezov. But what about a type of hyssop that was not recognized as a subspecies of hyssop, but was just called plain hyssop? So the Gemara says, that's defined by literally by Kabbalah Satira. It's not because the Torah didn't set out to define it. It just used the word. What did that word mean? There it's given literally by what the word meant at the time of Kabbalah Satira. What do you guys call hyssop? Oh, we don't call that hyssop. We call that hyssop granalis integratus. Yeah, but that's you guys that have lineas and got all of this stuff here. We don't know about anything about that. We just call it hyssop. So over there, in terms of the meaning of a word, instead of a definition that's given, the meaning is defined by the Etzem Kabbalah Satira. The definition is given by the Apayim Torah. That was the Chazon Ish's idea. And look, I mean, he points out that we do the most ridiculous things based on our relationship, even when we know they're ridiculous. So everybody knows there ain't no such thing as a 19-year cycle in which all of the planets go back to where it's ridiculous. It's not even true halacha because it would only work out according to the tkufa that we don't rely on, halacha. So why do we do it? Right? It's not an astronomical phenomenon. And we go out there and we make a bracha with Shaman Malchus about this wonderful occurrence. So again, even something like that, which is very clearly not astronomically true, but on the simplest level of experiencing the way things move, you think it's true because you live in Stonehenge. So in Stonehenge, they made a big celebration. So you guys make the same celebration for your Stonehenge. I mean, after all, how much exactitude is there in all of your astronomical data anyway? Do you understand the variability of every orbit and what happens if there's a small asteroid nearby? You just, yeah, but this is Jupiter. It doesn't matter. Every effect is an effect and can create all types of perturbances over the course of time. We don't look at that. We just look at a very simple way that humans like to believe that the world is a reliable kind of place and that everything can be boiled down to simple types of orbits and that the solar system is probably going to exist forever and that the mountains won't go tumbling into the sea and we don't need to be semich on Stand By Me. Okay, so that's basically the way we like to look at the world. It's all experience. I think that's the pshat. Mr. Rabbi Wonderful Moshe Reuven.
There's a rabbi here.
For sure.
I've got lots of questions about that, but I'm going to let this sink in for a little bit. But a different question. Is there any relationship between this Drusa and the Drisa that's a Pistulish Seed?
No.
It's the same.
Other than the word of pressing down with force. That's what we call it, Drusa.
When we're talking about Drusa, not going to see my name, it's very
interesting. Yeah. But no, yeah. Of course, we're talking about something else. Okay, so we actually had a fox here today. You just managed to escape. Look at that. I'm telling you, you can't be lying to anybody. Doesn't even give me a chance to play games. Okay, everyone. Think it over. Tell me what you think about the approach. Tell me whether, after thinking it over, whether you don't see that it's not only the only logical approach, but that to believe anything else is completely illogical. That even if you wouldn't have the evidence of it's not being functionally the same as we see the world, you would have anyway have had to say exactly this. This is not apologetics. It's just a description of the way that things are. That's all. It shouldn't have been raised as a problem in the first place. That's what I'm suggesting. It's a completely different way of looking at it. I think it's very, very, it sounds dramatic when you first hear it. But when you think about it, you realize, well, of course, obviously, what else could it be but experience? Okay, Rabosai, think about it. See you, Bezrat Hashem. Don't try to say it over to anybody. they'll for sure say you're not because. Both of them. We did have that special shiur to make people apikursim that was given to those mir bochurim, but you know, can't let that get out. All right.
Look how successful that was.
It was very successful.
Mind and Ari.
Amazing. All right. Go
We're
to
having people apart this week.
Your internet is not, or your mic is simply not, I can't hear a thing you're saying, but it's good to see you.
Did Rebbe see my comment about Mickey?
Mickey or Mikey?
Mickey.
Oh, Mickey?
He learned the thing about the trefa, that if the animal survives for 12 months, it's no longer a trefa. So he just made a hekesh. All the things that were trefa, he kept them for a year. He figured out that they're kosher.
So all those donuts, that's why they were always so spoiled? Oh.
That's why they were so good.
Goes to. Hey, Ori. Where's your hair? Your hairdo. What'd you do with your hair? You had that pretty pigtail. I think you should get your Abba to get his dad's brain in order. Where's the pigtail? Go to us.